This is Dr. Richard Verone continuing my oral history interview with Joey Welsh. Today is December 16th, 2005, and we are still in the same locations of Lubbock and Castroville. And Joey, let's you get out of the service in 69, and then you go back in June 1976. Tell me why you did that and what you were doing.
Well, you know, the first few years I was really out of it. You know, I couldn't hold a job. There just wasn't anything there that interested me. Mm-hmm. Okay, because in the first place, I didn't want to get out of the Army, but you know why all that happened. So, mm-hmm. A friend of mine, a couple years, I guess it was 72, 73. He asked me to come down and join the EMT, the rescue squad. Mm-hmm. And the EMT paramedic program was just coming in. Well, you know, I was hooked, you know. Mm-hmm. Once I heard that siren going off and I had adrenaline rushing, I was hooked. So I started going through the program and I started getting my head back on right and found that, you know, well, you know, this, you know, I really like it. I was working in the emergency room during the day, and then I would volunteer. That's the only thing wrong. There wasn't mm-hmm. any money yet. Mm-hmm. So I would volunteer a couple of days a week on a paramedic team, and then one night a week on my volunteer squad in my hometown. Mm-hmm. Well, another friend of mine who was on active duty training as a senior drill instructor for reserve drills. He was still on active duty, but they moved him over into there to work with them. Anyway, make a long story short, he said, you know, come on in, you know. He said, come on back in, and you'll be more automatic E5, and I wasn't working, you know, and he said, and I'll get you through the, you know, the 6 or 8 week course, whatever it is, and, you know, you'll be in. I said, okay. So I went in like June of 76, and I went to 4 dicks, and in the 3 days I was up there, I read the roll call, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So the next month I went up there, I went in, and as I was going through the line, these SF guys come in, right? Mm-hmm. And they see my patch. And we start talking in line, and they said, you know, I said, hey, you want to have lunch with me? Well, I said, oh, yeah. So we start talking, and they knew some of the guys. You know, we went back and forth. And they said, what are you doing? I said, where are you guys from? And they said, Pedricktown, which is northwest Jersey, mm-hmm. as you were, southwest, below me.
Okay.
And I said, damn, I can't believe I've been in, you know, Jersey for 20 years. I can't. He said, yeah, it's been, you know, it's the best kept secret corn. And all these guys have been in Nam 2 or 3 times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is how they got the rocks off. Mm-hmm. You know? And
doing Special Forces Reserve.
Right, yeah. So, they said, hey, man, would you like to, you know, come with us? I said, yeah. In them days, you had to, well, of course, I went up the next month. And see, it was reserves real easy interstate, you know, to transfer. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next month, I went up. I took a PT test in the morning. I met the commander. No, I took a PT test. And then I had to take the tape test. Now, in the old days, they gave you a tape test, which they don't do no more. In other words, they'd say, you ready? And you say, yeah. And you got the answer sheet, and it was a reel-to-reel, and they'd hit go. And they just ask you a very broad spectrum of questions that were, you know, and you didn't have much time to think. You know, you either knew it or you didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't pass that test, you didn't go. So I passed the test, and then I went to lunch with the guys, and then they said, hey, you know, company commander. There was only one company then. It was C Company, 11th Special Forces, 1st Special Forces Group Reserve. Mm-hmm. So I went and I met him, and he was super cool, man. He was a major, you know. He was really cool, and he was younger. He hadn't been, he said, but the training that she was with them, and they showed me some of the training they were doing, and I was really impressed. You know, they had been around for a long time, so they had like an annual training schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, a reserve gets to go on 2 week summer camp, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had five, and they didn't call them camps. They had five training missions a year, and you could, if you can get off work, you can go to all of them. I mean, they had them in Puerto Rico, a couple places in the States. You know, it was four or five trips, you know. And if you wasn't working, you could go on them. Or if you're, you know. And I just liked the whole atmosphere. And they said, you know, we evaluated all your things and your background. And he said, I'll put you on an A-team right now as the senior medic, or, you know. He said, I was in E5. He said, we need medics. And he said, you know, from what you've been through and plus your experience, and, you know, I talked to the battalion medic. He said, I'll put you on as a senior medic right now. I said, you know, well, what's all, you know, what do we have to do? He said, all you have to do is say yes. He says, this is all interstate. I'll just send 78th paperwork and you'll be here next month.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, let's go for it. So in the following month, I went, and it was like a Class A inspection. Then they looked at me. See, I had just been a drill sergeant, you know. And SF, they, you know, nowadays they're pretty squared away, but, you know, old-timers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I came in there, I was like, you know, of course, I didn't have all my stuff on like I would have known. That's one thing, that's, I think, when it started hitting me. And
what started hitting you?
Hitting me that, you know, I had lost the awards I was supposed to have.
Okay.
It never really bothered me. And I can honestly say that since I got my CIB, I was fortunate for that. But when I started looking around and saying, you know, shit, you know, everybody's running around with a couple silver stars, bronze stars, and stuff like that. And, you know. So, but I just let it slide. I said, hey, you know, that's in the past. And, so things are going good, you know, and I spent, I don't know how long it was, a little bit less than 2 years, but we had little problems in our team. Our demo man and our team sergeant were running guns and everything else. You know, they were good old boys, lived out in the country, and they had a plan out there from, I guess it was DEA or something, you know, buying up shotguns you started with, and all one thing led to another, and I don't know, they got caught trying to sell them like 50 pounds of C4 or something, I don't know.
Who were they selling it to?
An undercover agent.
Okay.
And, you know, they didn't know, they got caught, so that sort of busted up the team. So for a couple months there, it was, you know, push or shove. And at the same time, I was back with my wife, and I said, look, I said, the paramedics, you can't get a job nowhere unless you're up north, and I'm not making enough money. I'm considering on going back. See, I figured I'd just go back in the Army as an E5, you know. And I said, well, I'm considering going back in the Army. So we talked. And I said, if I can, I'll try to give you the first year in the States, because I was going to go to the Rangers, but I figured I'd try to give her the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So I woke up the recruiter, and he said, how you doing, Sergeant? Hey, how you doing? I said, you know, I'd like to come back in. He said, I can't bullshit you, Sarge. He said, there's my quota board up there. You see, prior service is zero. I don't even need you. You know, he said, plus you've been out of active duty for more than 5 years, correct? Right, yeah. He said, so you are going to have to start all over. He said, if you're out less than 5 years, we can put you through the 6-week Minuteman and you drop one rank. But once you go beyond 5 years, I don't care if you're in reserves or what, active duty. He said, I'll give you E2, and you start all over again, basic training, AIT, the whole 9 yards. And any MOS you qualify, and I'll give you 12 months in the States. So I said, oh, man. I said to myself, well, you know, if they I'm not going to go into being a medic because in E2 I'll be pushing aspirin. So I enlisted for the infantry, and the first 12 months will be at Fort Ord, California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I got down. I went in October 79, and it was just an entirely different world. I mean, I was down at a reception station, and there was people running around going crazy. I mean, there was no formations. You know, this is before we got, there was girls running around with T-shirts and no bra,
mm-hmm.
and they were just partying. I said, sooner or later, somebody's going to say, somebody's got to yell at me or something, you know. So, I was with a couple other guys, but one other guy specifically, Larry Troxell, he had spent 6 years in airborne infantry with a couple tours in Vietnam, you know. Well, they finally made everybody get their hair cut and they got us uniforms. So I said, all right, shit starts now, nothing. So I had my little one striper, but I had my pin-on wings and my, you know, pin-on CIB. And in them days, we still were in the plain green with the baseball cap, you know. And it was all subdued. We had little black wings up top and our combat patches, you know. Started feeling like a soldier again. Of course, I had been playing soldier. I was in reserve a couple of years. But so the TAC, the guy who takes care of you while you're there waiting for the drill sergeants to pick you up, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, hey, Welsh, come here. He said, listen, I got to take off road. Yeah, you mind taking charge? I said, no, I don't mind. You know?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you and Troxell, if anything happens, you know, give me a call or whatever. I said, okay. Everybody outside! Boy, we took him outside. And boy, we just raised hell with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the hell you think you're going. We were in there, shit. I was up and down, doing push-ups, everything. We were doing it with him, right? And, somebody said something. I said, I'll tear your throat out. We just went off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
Was that fun for you?
Was it fun for me? No, I was serious, stone serious. You know, these people got to wake up. You're in the goddamn service, you know. And I had raise your hand if you're going to infantry, you're doing this, you know. I said, you better wake the hell up. I said, right now you're in Disneyland, son. The next 48 hours, your whole world's going to change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And some pretty big guy tried to give me some shit, and I went to knock the shit out of him, Larry, and, you know, he backed up. I said, I'll tear your freaking throat out or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I said, when I say you're dismissed, I want you in your building, in your goddamn room, and I don't want to hear a freaking peep out of anybody. So, they took off. There's about 100 of them. So, next morning, we called down to the first sergeant's office. We know the whole deal. Knock him, and he shuts the door, and the talk says, damn, Wells, were you crazy? And I said, what? And he told us everything happened. Did you do it? And we said, yeah, we did it. He said, no, man. You can't. I said, what's this, a new action army? You know, and the first sergeant laughed.
Mm-hmm.
He said, son, Wells, he said, I couldn't call me something. You're going to infantry, so you'll be okay where you're going. But you know, you got to wake up. This is, you're right. This is the new action army. I said, I can't believe it. First sergeant, I said, these son of a bitch have been running around like they've been at a day camp for 4 days. When I was in reception station, you was called a pussy. And they put you in a big long overcoat, and when the winter pile caps, and you had to wear down over years until you got a haircut and you got a uniform. Okay? And that's what you was. Hey, pussy, you was a goddamn, that's what they called you. And then once you got your shit on, you know, he said, things have changed, you know. He said, but anyway, you guys will be getting picked up tomorrow morning, so have your bags packed, and you might want to help these guys that are going to Fort Benning, Georgia for infantry training, help them out a little bit. And so trucks was just hitting like, fuck them son of bitches, I ain't helping nobody, them goddamn punk ass. He said, okay, take it easy, truck. They were pretty cool about it.
Mm-hmm.
They got a kick out of it because nobody got hurt. And I think in their mind they wish it was like that too, but it can't be.
Mm-hmm.
So next day, like three buses pull up, and we're all lined up out there. And now the first thing I see is the right arm, 173rd Airborne, and I start getting rushes. Me and Truck trying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's slender but built really good. I mean, he was just, you know, spotless. And what got there was the black E7, you know, CIB, cabbage, old bit, man. And he looked up and down, he was talking to the clerk who's getting ready to, you know, release us. Welsh! Still talking! Said, front and center, pew, I was there, you know. He said, Welsh, you got the second bus. I said, roger that. He said, get him on. Mm-hmm. He said, Troxel, you got the third bus. He said, we'll stop in somewhere halfway from South Carolina to Georgia. And we'll unload them, give them a meal ticket, we'll run them through and put them back on. Any questions? No drill, sir. I said, all right, get them on. I said, all right, but get on, you know. And so we had our trip, and they started off singing jolly shit and all, and then they fell asleep like puppies. Then we had our dinner. Well, then by the time we got to Fort Benning, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we got there, we had to go around and they go to the PACS, the personnel center, and they drop off the records and all that they need. And then they pulled up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was still light out.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I'll never forget it. That bus stopped, that drill sergeant walked on. He said, on behalf of Command General, I'd like to welcome you. You're not in fucking pussy land, Fort Jackson, anymore. When I tell you to get out, I want you to get out, grab two bags, put them over there, and you get in formation over there. You understand me? You better get out of here. What are you waiting for? They were climbing out the fucking windows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know? And, you know, finally he moved out. As I stepped off, he said, Welsh. He said, yeah. He said, you stand right here, parade rest. I said, yes, drill sergeant. This is another drill sergeant,
mm-hmm.
not the guy who traveled with us.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, they had them guys doing flips over, getting the bag, doing this, getting this, getting that, getting the roster, getting everything. And what they do is they just, you know, right away grab them by the balls, and because this is infantry and they're going to be there 13 weeks, and get them all lined up alphabetically and, you know, right amount people and all that stuff. And me and Troxel were still standing by the bus at parade rest. And then when they got them all settled, they said, well, Troxel, yes, first sergeant, first army out there. He said, well, you got third platoon leader, and Troxel, you get fourth platoon. Something like that. I don't know what the platoon was. And then they sort of picked like a guy that they've been watching is like kind of athletic and usually a bigger guy, athletic. And they all assigned them, even though they're brand new, somebody's got to be the platoon leader. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he might not last in that position, but. Well, from that time on, you know, we just busted ass. I mean, we tried to help our guys, you know, and I was in really good shape, so I had no trouble with the PT and all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't, which happened to me when I was a drill sergeant, we didn't say stuff like, you drill sergeant can't do that. So anybody pissed, I said, shut your goddamn mouth, you know. I said, let me tell you something. When you graduate here, your ass could be in combat. You'd be a patriot. So the drill sergeants, we didn't realize. The drill sergeants and the first sergeant all were watching us because they were get a lot of shithouse lawyers in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you mean by that?
Okay. In other words, the drill sergeant threatens a guy or does something, then a prior service guy, when they're alone, tells him, he can't do that, you can do this, do that, you can go here and do this and do that. He, you know,
right.
He stirs up trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we weren't like that. We were, you know, at 5 o'clock, I remember I had a big, huge black E-7 Sergeant Thomas. He said, "You got him, Welsh?" I said, "Right." Drill Sergeant said, "All right, I'm going home." Because I told them everything from the day they got there, how to make their bed, how to be lined up, what they had to be ready for. And believe it or not, I didn't realize it, that, and either the Troxel, that like about over 70% of these guys were enlisted for assignment to the Ranger Battalion. So we had a lot of young gun-ho kids without us even really knowing it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, they were eating this shit up. You know, mm-hmm. And it was well over 70%, you know, if they made it, that's where they would go on, that's what they enlisted for. So about what they do in, it's called one station unit training, which is one of the best things they came up with. Mm-hmm. Instead of sending them down to Pussyland, Fort Jackson and go through 6-7 weeks of punk ass ed basic training, you can quote me on that, mm-hmm. punk training, you know, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden their whole world turned upside down and the drill sergeant gets them for 8 weeks of infantry training, it's just not enough time, mm-hmm. you know, because you've got to build something that, you know, it hasn't been built. Mm-hmm. So what they did was with all combat arms, be it air, infantry, armor, artillery, MPs, engineers, like that, you go to one station, and that's the station, or I should say the fort where they teach the AIT, and you start from day one, and your class can be 14, 16 weeks, nonstop. So from the day you get off the bus, your whole world is geared infantry, mm-hmm. okay, and engineer, artillery, you know, so they take them, and it's all infantry or artillery or armor drill sergeant, you know, so they're taking them right from the beginning to the end. There's no 7 weeks and then a 10-day leave and all that, and then go. No, it's balls to the wall for 13 weeks, mm-hmm. and it's the best program that they come up with. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, every soldier should go through a minimum of 10 weeks basic soldiering where they get all that grunt stuff. See, that's why the Marines have got what they got. Mm-hmm. One, they're smaller. Okay, very small. And everybody goes through the same first 11 weeks, females included. Everybody learns to be a grunt Marine. Mm-hmm. And then they go on to their advanced training. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I don't care. You look at a young Marine that comes out of boot camp, and then you look at a damn Army GI that comes out of basic training, and there's no comparison. That Marine is standing tall, looking good, and he's ready.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
The Discrete decorum morale is so much higher because of that system, you know? Mm-hmm. And if they don't make it through that system, they're out. Where we take them down here, we got drill sergeants that said, drill sergeants, you need me, drill sergeants, you know, and they don't even have to meet the standards of passing the PT test when they get to us, you know, so it worked out. Anyway, about at 7 weeks, you now split into, there's various infantry MOSs. Mm-hmm. You come in as 11X. And then according to your request for assignments and what the Army needs, they have to have so many infantrymen, mortarmen, and tow gunners. Okay? Mm-hmm. Alright. So then they break it down. And usually if you're mathematically inclined and you're manually, and you have 630, manual dexterity, you'll get picked for mortars, mm-hmm. okay? Because you got to have, that's two qualities. Well, about that time is, you know, when they were switching everybody, they called their first sergeant. We were told to report to the first sergeant, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're standing pretty ready. He said, Eddie, he said, look, myself, the commander, and all the drills have been watching you for 7 weeks. And, first of all, you guys did a damn good job. You know, say nothing. Because he said, man, we got guys come in here that are out of shape, they can't run. Drill sergeant says something to them, and then they go in and play shithouse lawyer. And, you know, you guys ain't never said nothing wrong. You ain't never complained, and you have definitely motivated these kids. And I don't know whether you know it or not, you both being airborne and, you know, Ranger affiliated and all, he said, but I look at this roster, and we did, and he said, look at that. Over 70% of these guys, if they make it, are going to go to the Ranger battalion. And he said, you've definitely, you know, got a good group of guys out there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to offer you this. Instead, now we got 7 more weeks of training, but I know that you guys could go past the test right now. You know, mm-hmm. you could go to qualify on the 60 machine gun and that, and take the final exam. And he said, here's the deal. And the battalion commander approved it. He said, we're going to pull you out of training, and we're going to let you, on your own, coordinate through, and it's called makeup training. You know, you hook mm-hmm. on with somebody that's going, mm-hmm. okay? And we'll get yourself all the way through your, we had to do several weapons, and then you had to take the final exam and all that. He said, get qualified as fast as you can, and then I'll make you drill corporals, and that's what you'll do. You'll be a drill sergeant assistant until you graduate. Mm-hmm. And we said, okay, no problem. So he gave us our own room in deserted holdover barracks upstairs, and we didn't waste no time, man. I mean, you know, he gave us a list of the, like, you know, people to call and all, man, and gave us a pickup truck, you know, mm-hmm. and we were gone. Within about 10, I'd say, maybe 7-8 days, we were qualified. Mm-hmm. He said, damn, you didn't waste much time. You know, I said, hey, well, they were going, and that's all we needed, was somebody to go there, you know. I mean, we sat through the instruction hall, and then we did shoot the automatic weapon, shoot the grenade launcher, shoot the machine gun. All right, let's go. What's next, you know? And then you got to go through this big POIQT, performance-oriented infantry qualification test. It's got, like, about 30 stations, you know? And we just zipped right on through there. You know, we were just like, what's next? What's next? You know, because we were on our own. And as soon as we got that, that was a big thing. Once you pass POIQT, boom, he said, okay, you're done. Then he gave us, you know, some pistol belts and made us drill corporals. It's no rank. They don't give you no money for it. It's an acting drill corporal, you know, mm-hmm. to do that. They used to do it. And he said, all right. Well, she's going to be working with, and I was working with that black guy that picked us up originally, and Troxel, you're going to work with the other guy. He said, the reason I'm doing that is I don't want you to show favoritism, which I know you won't, mm-hmm. but, you know, just to get you away from your platoon. Mm-hmm. However, you know, your drill sergeant will give you guidance, and you go by that guidance. So I went up there, you know, and the black guy was really cool. How you doing? What's your name, man? You know, I said, Joey. He said, Joey, I'm so-and-so. And, you know, he said, you guys doing good. He said, listen, Top already talked to you about these guys who are going range and all. He said, you know, you got to really push them, especially in PT. You know, we got to really push them because they're going to jump school. When they graduate Friday, they will go to jump school. 3 weeks after that, when they graduate jump school, they will pick them up for Ranger, and they will go 30 days Ranger indoctrination program. If they complete that, then they will go to a Ranger battalion for six months or more before they even send them to Ranger school. that's the way they work it. Okay, he said, you know, they want to ensure by the time they get to ranger school that they're going to pass, you know, and not only pass, they're usually going to excel, which is true. So he said, okay, so basically that's what we did for the last 6 weeks. We just, you know, pushed the troops, you know, and they let us sing cadence, the whole thing. Well, get up there and sing cadence, you know, march them everywhere. And then at night they pissed me off. I took them all out in the street and we marched and we marched and we only marched about 3 blocks. I marched them right into the woods, right? The trucks were later said, man, you are crazy, Welsh. And then we all got, and I just started low crawling. And they all low crawl. I low crawled for about, I don't know how long, around the circle and got them back up. And I said, now you're going to start sounding off and around. Yes, true, Corporal. And off we went, you know. So my orders came down. I was going to go to 7th Infantry Division, you know, which, oh man, I really didn't want to, but, you know, for the old lady's sake. The 7th Infantry Division at that time was a gang. So anyway, let's see, did I go home on leave? So here's what happened, no. They have Exodus. In other words, around the 18th or 20th of December till 3rd of January, all, everything ceases. You know. And, training. Everybody goes on a half-day training schedule and all that kind of stuff. So what they do in our situation, fortunately, we had had them guys there for a good 6-7 weeks, so their head was going pretty good, you know. So we weren't, we still had enough time to get them back on their feet. Anyway, they sent them. Well, they give you the opportunity to go home or stay in a holdover barracks. Okay. And, so we had a 2 week break, say, I think it's 18, around 21, 22 December to 3 January. It's an Exodus. And,
this is 77?
79. So that happens every year.
Okay.
Okay. No matter what, even if there's a war going on, they're going to have an Exodus. You know, and the entire army goes on half-day sex. Now, I mean, I shouldn't say that if there's a war going on. If you're not in the war, okay, if you're a stateside, you know, now what I did as a first sergeant, I work it out. I would let the section sergeant work it out. I would tell him how many people I wanted there, but you still have to have somebody there, okay? But rather than have the guys eat up their leave, I tried to give them a little, since they were good. I say, I don't care if you do one on, two off, whatever. I want somebody here, you know, X amount of hours, and give me the schedule. You work it out. And this way, a guy doesn't have to eat up leave. Some of them would just go on leave just so they wouldn't be bothered, but, you know. So, that basically, that's what happens. And really, the personnel centers, and finance and everything, they only do a half-day schedule. So they'll work their people till noon, and that's it for them 12, 14 days, whatever it is. So you can't get nothing done anyway after 1 o'clock, you know what I mean? But if you still have to secure your area. So, you know. So we waited till they came back. I believe I might have went home. I can't even remember. I don't know. Yes, I did. I did go home. I think I went home because I wasn't going to go home after I graduated. I wanted to go right to Fort Ord to get down there and get set up so I could get housing for, you know, even if you're a private and you're married, they try to give you housing. So they went, they did their Exodus, and then they came back, and we did 5-6 more weeks, and then February, they graduated, and I went to Fort Ord, California. Okay. And I'm, of course, I'm in Class A's when I get off you know, thing, and they take you to what they call a turtle farm. Turtle farm is where all incoming and outgoing personnel, that's where they sleep, and they stay there, and then they in and out process, as whatever system that that unit has, okay? And the guys who work there, so they can be easily identified, they take these helmet liners, the old helmet liners, you know, and they paint them black and these little emblems on them, and they make them wear pistol belts. So they can be identified. And they usually pick strat guys that can march people, because you gotta march these guys down, because most of them are just coming into the army. But then you've got, what's bad about it is you got guys that are coming from overseas that are getting out of the army. And they can be a problem, you know, because they screw you, you know. And so, anyway, I get off the bus and I was in E2, you know, I have one stripe, and they don't, you know, treat you like a drill sergeant or not like that. They just said, you know, they say, hey, private so-and-so, hey, sergeant, you know, it's not no harassment or nothing like that. It's more trying to get a lot of stuff done in a few days to get you up on the hill. Okay. So as I get off to E5 airborne, you know, stuff I get, he said, well, I said, yes, sir. He said, where you been, what you done? I told him, he said, you want a job? I said, doing what? He said, taking my job. He said, I'm leaving in 90 days. I'll get you working here, man. It'd be a good place to start, you know. He said, you know, they'll promote you to E3 right away and put on your corporal stripes, and, you know, you just push troops until you get settled in. So, you know, I said, what the hell, you know? So I went in, I go see, said, let's go see the first arm. So, you know, I have no records, and first arm was in E6. Okay. Pretty sharp guy, but anyway. So I said, okay, yeah, no problem. So, this also gave me a little bit higher priority on getting housing, too, you know, because they sort of put me in an instructor status.
Joe, are you, you're not married now, or you're not, are you seeing anyone? Do you have somebody
married
with you? You are married at this point.
No, at that point, I had reconciled with my wife, and I was bringing my wife and children. That's why I gave them California. That's where she wanted to go.
Right.
And after 11, 12 months, you know, we would see what would happen. This was their first tour. They had never known anything, so I didn't want to take them to the Rangers or something. I'd never be there.
Right.
So, and then I lucked out and got this great job.
Yeah.
You know, so,
hey, can you tell me a little bit about your children? I mean, who they were, then?
They're saying who they were.
Well, no, I don't mean literally, but just tell me,
okay,
I mean, how old were they?
At that time, let's see, let's say it was 1980, so my daughter was 10, and my son was 13. And I had been married, he was my stepson, really, but I could still call my son. He was 2.5 years old when we got married. Now, I got married about a year and a half after I got out of Vietnam. But we had been separated about 15 times, you know, from 70 to 75, 76, because, you know, my mental stability, instability. And so, but they weren't going to come out there until, you know, I got a house and all that, and that took about 5 or 6 weeks. So, I went to work at Turtle Farm, and boom, you know, it wasn't hard. It was a pain in the butt sometimes because, you know, you had to deal with some personality and people, you know, you know, but then they moved me over to training NCO to another company, so that was more suitable for me. my wife and kids came in, and, you know, I was just soldiering my ass off, just trying to get back in the system. And so I got there February 80 as an E2. Mm-hmm. On 1 December 80, I made Sergeant E5. Okay? Mm-hmm. Which is, you just say, but that's fast, you know?
Well, I know.
It takes you like 3 or 4 years.
Well, how did that happen? I mean, I was
because I was experienced. I did very well down there. I went to the company that I was working for, and I just, you know, the guy I was working there was some slob, and I put that company together in its training cycle, its re-enlistment, NCO. You know, I put all the records straight. I did what was supposed to be done, mm-hmm. and did it better than it's supposed to be done. That's the way I do things.
Joey, did it feel good to be recognized in the face of all
I didn't seek recognition. This is just the way I am. Okay, and you know, they made me an I was an E3 acting corporal, and then you only have to be an E3 for so many months, and then they made me an E4 and made me an acting jack. In other words, I was an E4, but they let me wear E5 stripes.
Well, I was going to ask you, in the face of what you did in Vietnam and not being recognized, now you are being recognized for your talents. And
well, no, I was recognized by my peers. That's all that counted. That that I had done my job. If you're out there with Joey, I was a lurper. They're a lurper. That's all that mattered to me. Them medals, I didn't have time to dwell on that.
Mm-hmm.
It was over. What was done was done. Wasn't looking for that. What I was looking for was to bust my ass to make Sergeant E5, because then I could volunteer for drill sergeant school. You can't be a drill sergeant E5 unless you volunteer, and they only select the best, because E6 and above, they can be drafted. Once you become an E6, your records leave your local status, and they are given to the Department of Army, and they sort of give you a career manager. Because once they feel you're E6 or above, you're going to make it a career. So in other words, up until you make E6, you're basically controlled by your unit level. See? So if you want to go to drill sergeant school as an E5, you have to request it, and you have to have letters of recommendation and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I had went to the board. I maxed out the board, promotion board, mm-hmm. questions and all that. And they said, okay, you're going to be promoted. Now you have to wait so many months before it comes down. In the meantime, I went around and started building my packet on my own, mm-hmm. with the help of a guy from personnel that I knew. The colonel interviewed me, and, Sergeant Major, he was like, hey, no problem, what do you want me to write? He really, really liked me. And he knew that, I was there to move on. A lot of good soldiers are not sent to schools, and they're not promoted because they don't want to release them from their unit because they need them.
Right.
And they send me shit. They send the assholes, and it happened to my nephew when he was in the Rangers.
Well, it's because they know you'll straighten them out.
What?
They know you'll straighten them out, but it hurts your career. It hurts these people's
career.
No,
you're missing a point. Let me see this. No. The man who deserves it, okay, is the guy who works the hardest, and he's got to be there and all that, okay? Well, a lot of units will keep him there, and they'll send another guy. So that other guy getting that school, he'll get promoted faster than the good guy.
I see what you're saying.
You see?
Yeah, the good guy rubs off on the other guy, and the other guy benefits so much.
Right, because they don't want to leave their good guys to go to the school because they need them to take care of the business.
Mm-hmm. What happened to your nephew?
Well, that, I don't even want to get into that. It was just, for instance, you know, he should have been going to the school, and they sent somebody else, and so he got screwed.
Right.
Because he was a better soldier, they didn't want to leave him.
How often did you see this in your career?
A lot. Mm-hmm. A lot. You know. Some of them would send him, and some of them, you know, it just, it depends on the school and all. Now, if it's just some rinky-dink school, but when you're talking about leadership development courses that you must have to punch your ticket, you know, my guys were told when I was the first arm and I brought them in, I told them like this, you work for me, and you work for me, and you give me 100%, when you leave here, I'm going to be talking to your career manager, and I'll try to get you what I think and you think you need. I'm not just going to send you after being 2 years out there on the trail under a hat, you know, back to your unit. I'll try to get you, if you want to go to advanced NCO course or you want to go to a battle staff operations or something, I'm going to try to get you, no, I am going to get you an attaboy for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's the way Special Ops was in, because they were in Special Warfare Center. Once you reach a certain point in your career as SF, you got to go back and be, and you, they hate it. They hate it. They hate to go back because they got to go back to the schoolhouse. But you got to give back what you know. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you luck out and you get on a HALO committee or scuba school, you know, you're all right. But, you know, you can get, man, you know, pushing troops. You know, you can get some really mundane, lousy jobs. Okay? But you got to give back your time. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You got to pay back. So I told them, look, you know, you give me 100%, and I can guarantee you, because I call them career managers, you know, directly. And I'll also take care of you if, you know, if anybody tries to screw you.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it was. But, on the other hand, if you think you're going to come in here, you know, rag-bagged out, and you know, cruising, then you might as well take your ass down the street right now, because I'll run your ass down the street. That's the way I live in the Army. That's the way the Army has to live.
Mm-hmm.
You're there to do a job. You ask for it. You volunteered. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You volunteered for the Army. Then you volunteered for the infantry. And then you volunteered for airborne. So you ask for it, and you're getting it. And if you can't hang, then, you know, get your ass out of here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the philosophy. Same way with LERP. And, you know, we were four times, you know, volunteers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are like that, once they realize that, I don't know how, but it's the hard part here because you can go either way. Some people will try to use the system and, you know, let's say get over. You know what I mean? Where you let the other guys do the work and, you know, they'll just ride.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, well, a slacker.
Mm-hmm.
But he don't look like that in front of the bosses.
Right.
Okay. But that don't happen in good airborne ranger units or airborne infantry units. Because we'll just kick his damn ass. That's the bottom line. You know? Or, you know, somebody sooner or later is going to say, hey, wait a minute. There was three of us assigned his goddamn detail, Sarge. Where you been after lunch? You know, and then, so you beat the shit out of him, or you lose. One or the other, you beat the shit out of him. and tell them, God damn it, you work with me, you work with me, don't you? You know. Mm-hmm. So that's where I grew up in the Army, and that's the way I lived in the Army. Is, you know, we could take the go behind the barracks right now. You know, you don't do that. They don't do that in the new action army, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, but let's take it around back, you know. And you'd be surprised. Some guys have become the best of friends with that. Seriously, mm-hmm. You know, they sort of got you know, took a little respect from each other. And but anyway, see, there I went. So. So anyway, I went down there, and then once I got there, and in December I put in, December 1980, all right? Mm-hmm. And I told him I wanted Fort Benning. Well, they said, you can be sent anywhere. I said, no, ma'am, I've got to go to Fort Benning, see if infantry drill, so I can go anywhere. And my orders come down, and March, I was in Fort Benning. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I went there early. Let's put it this way. Whenever I went anywhere, while I was still on leave, I'd go and find a job. I'd go job hunting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I did was I went back to the battalion that trained me and let me go in February 1980. I went right back to the battalion headquarters, knocked on the door, went in. They said, who are you? And I said, I'm Sergeant Welsh. I went through here, and Colonel so-and-so here. Oh, no, he left. When I heard a major say, hey, Welsh. And he was a battalion commander. Now, he liked us because me and another drill, he was a boxer and enthusiast, and me and another drill, he made it, put a team together of trainees, guys that had a train and all, and we won post championships. Okay, so when I walked through the door, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? I said, well, you know, they selected me, you know, for drill sergeant. He said, school, all right, no problem. He said, but I'm not going to sign you to the same company, right? I said, yeah, no problem, sir. He said, okay, cut this guy orders and send him down to B Company. So that was it, you know. So I went down three buildings away from where I trained, then it's a new system now, but then you have to be within drill sergeant school within 60 days. Well, as soon as I met my senior drill, I said, hey, he's a former Ranger. I said, Sergeant Thomas, I can't be waiting around 60 days. I'm worthless without the hat. I need to get in that school, and there's an opening in, I think it was 2 weeks. I said, I need to get in that school. You know that. This is bullshit. He said, all right. So he just didn't talk First Sergeant. First Sergeant, he said, no, First Sergeant, there's an opening. We have a slot, and I'm sending Sergeant Walsh. All right, do whatever. So, boom, I was lucky. And I was in school, and then, all right, I got there in March. It's amazing. I graduated drill sergeant school in July, and mm-hmm. It's 8 weeks long mm-hmm. at that time. So, see, because they've changed it now. Everyone goes from the unit on temporary duty to Fort Jackson and spends 11 weeks there. And if they become a drill sergeant, then they're sent back to the unit, and they receive orders to move. Because in the old days, you'd get sent down there and you might break your leg, you might have family problems, you might trip and fall, you might be dumb, you know, you might be ate all up and you're eating up a drill sergeant thing. So now what they do is they send you to school before they reassign you, which is smarter. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now when you come to that, you know, like say you're in Fort Dix, and then you go to drill sergeant school in Fort Jackson. When you come back from Fort Dix, then they reassign you as a drill sergeant to maybe Fort Gordon, and you're ready when you hit the ground. You're a drill sergeant. You see, mm-hmm. So it's a better system. Of course, and everyone goes through the same exact training. Okay, ours was a little different because we were training only infantry. Okay, even though they tell you about it. Okay, here's what happens if we have to give you this training for all drill sergeants received. And it was like female training. And we ain't gonna have no females, but you still gotta go through it. And they sit you down, they said, now we're gonna show you a bunch of vignettes, and I might not pronounce it right.
No, you did.
Well, I didn't know what the hell it was. None of us did. We said, what the hell is that? And he said, let me tell you something. Drill sergeant school was extremely, extremely hard. I mean, you have to know every single thing verbatim, I couldn't find the drill sergeant school when I got to Fort Benning, Georgia. Nobody, not even the MPs, knew where that school was. They had that in the middle of a field with a few trees around it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It took me 3 days to find it. Because these guys are, so stressed. The only good thing about it is it's non-residential. Because you already moved there and you go to school in the morning and you come back. But it's so stressful. I mean, if you pulled up as a civilian, you see guys stand there talking to a tree. I'm not sure, talking to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard.
But you thrive in that kind of atmosphere.
Well, I had my kids. Every night they sit down and I say, all right, sit down there and I'm going to give you a class. Okay? And I say, next moving up, name, spring, demonstration, stuff, crack, work on, is this. And when I was a recon instructor, I had them teaching demolition. And they had to sit there and do it. And they kind of dug it then, because they're a little bit older, And they had a little sheet, and they said, hey, you're wrong, guy, you're wrong, So it worked out pretty good. But I remember I was teaching them a non-electric explosive device, And here I am teaching my kids how to put a blasting cap in the C4. We had training aids, of course, But the whole idea with a drill sergeant is, everything's verbatim. There's no deviation. Next movement, I'll name, explain, discuss, and conduct practical exercise on is position of attention. The position of attention is used, everything. You get a word wrong, you're wrong. That's it. Okay.
How did you do with that, within that atmosphere?
How did I do?
Yeah.
I made it. It was small. We had 8 week classes, only two classes. I think we came in, the freshman class came in around the fifth or sixth week, something like that, the way they overlapped it. Okay. But there was only 12 men in the class. And, we only lost one guy. Because you have to help each other. You have to work as a team. Because what they do is they just demonstrate a couple times. They don't stand out there and teach you nothing. But there's some things that are mandatory for them to show you. So, as I was saying, we sat down and we're going to watch this vignette. Now I said, don't say nothing. You just, the camera is going to be like the drill sergeant. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine yourself, you're sitting there and just pay attention to what goes on. You'll catch on. So we're sitting there and we hear a knock on the door and come in. Now the camera, of course, is saying this. And this nice looking blonde, real starch, real pretty, comes in and all. And she starts whining. I didn't get a pass, drill sergeant. Well, you had 6 demerits this weekend and all that, right? And she says, I really need to go downtown. And then she started unbuttoning her blouse, right? And, seriously, she's unbuttoning her thing, and she says, you know, I'd do anything for a pass. And she pulls off her top, real nice lace bra, and stops. And she said right to me, Welsh, what would you do? I said, fuck her. And he said, no. You know, I said, no. As the first thing out of our mind, my brain was, you know, because, I mean, we all shut up, man, and started watching this stuff now because, you know, she was nice. And we weren't, I mean, we didn't know how much she was going to take off. But, you know, wrong answer. The guy was pretty cool, you know. Mm-hmm. He let me get away with it. But it wasn't, it was a natural reflex. Mm-hmm. He just said, Welsh, what do you do? I said, fuck her. You know, get it. He said, no, wrong. And then they tell you, never let no one in without a witness. Don't shut the door. Okay, bullshit, you know. But they, you know, they put you in a lot of different situations, okay, mm-hmm. where a girl comes in and she shuts the door, but she's got a different attitude. She starts ripping her shit and yelling rape.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
You're being prepared for pretty much anything, any kind of contingency.
Yeah. Never, ever be alone with a female. Always have the door open. Always ensure that you say man on the floor before you enter that building so that they, you know, well, they're not supposed to be running around naked anyway. But, of course, like, I eventually did wind up training females, and the policy was... that they would go into the bathroom, shower, cleaned up, and they would either come out in uniform, or if they were going to bed, it would be in PT uniform. So they would never appear less than a PT. Now, that didn't work out that way, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to the NCO Academy, it was even worse. Oh, my God. But, you know... And then as soon as a man, well, when I, we didn't have to worry about that, but we had to be trained. So we'll get through that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He said, now that drill sergeant we had, he worked 2 years, and he said, he told us some horror stories, you know, about some good stories that turned out to be horror stories, you know, because
mm-hmm.
All you do is, you know, you do it with the girl, and if for some reason she wants out or she whatever, she could, they've got you by the ball.
Hey, Joey, this is in 79, 80?
This is in 81.
Okay.
So I got through the school, and did all right, you know, graduated, and you can't win. And you know, there's always the new guy that Sherry would call him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I come in there all, you know, silly badass, you know, into the company, and they go, oh, here comes the new Sherry drill, you know. So you're always being harassed. You're always being, it's always competitive. But, you know, it's good. It's all in good spirits because, mm-hmm. You know, you're the new guy. So you're the new guy, so you got to do this, and it's really what they're doing is they're training you, because until you get some dust on that hat, you don't know what you're doing. It's like anything. You come out of any school, yeah, I'm qualified special forces. I'll tell you what, you don't know your ass from all on the ground until you've been on a special forces team for 6 months to a year minimum. You see? Because the school and the books, you know, are a lot different than the jungle and the terrain and the situation that you're going to find yourself in. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, same way as a drill sergeant. I mean, yes, you made it through school, but you didn't have any troops. You know, you just dealt with each other. Now, how can you handle troops? And what's going to happen when you get in the 8th, 9th, 10th week and you are so burnt out? I mean, you're so ripped. And these kids are getting stronger because, you know, they come in a mess. And by the time 8, 9, 10 weeks, they're ready to run through the walls and you're ready to die because you're so tired from being there. You know, that's when your stress level really gets tested. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of guys, you know, go off and But you're allowed to, they call it mental, you're allowed to just stop, and as long as there's somebody else there, and take a mental break or mental retreat. Get away from it and all that. But, you know, or if you start to have a altercation with another trainee, the drills will come in and they'll muscle you out because you're out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll still get in his face, but they're under what we call a controlled rage and an uncontrolled rage. So to save your buddy, you get him out of the system, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're still on that trainee, but you're in control. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And they had to do that to me only once. So they, you know, before I knew it, two guys had pulled me away, and another drill sergeant were on this guy, because I was going to, I don't know what I was going to kill this son of a bitch. You know,
mm-hmm.
He was one of the guys that finally, he'd been in there, you know, in like 8-9 weeks now. He was going to make a stand. Wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the only next thing, and John knew it, was, you know, the next thing, if we wouldn't have got there, I said I was going to tear his fucking head off. He said, yep. I said, I appreciate it, guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to make a stand, but boy, I'll tell you, there was three drill sergeants all over, up and down his ass, and, you know, up, down, push-ups, you know, blah, blah. Rest of the platoon, everybody get falling, stand fast, stand for a rest, and you watch, you know, and then they see, whoa, dude, damn, man, you don't want to piss this guy off, you know. So, sooner or later, somebody's going to stand up to you,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
And he didn't budge, and so, you know, there was only one next thing, you can't back down, okay,
mm-hmm.
all right, and my sense and experience was went to, you know, survival, and that was take them out. That's where I was at. I'm going to just take this man. He didn't, because the trainee was gone, there was an enemy in front of me, and he was going down. That's where my rage was, and they knew it.
How would you do that? How would you go about it?
Well, I probably would have just went right through. Well, if I wanted to kill him, I would have just rammed two fingers up in his eyeball and just kept on running backwards until he's dead. You know, that's one way of doing it. But I probably would have, you know, went and grabbed him by the throat and took him down like that. You know, like, went at him like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just put him into his throat, and he's going to grab. As soon as he does that, you do a leg sweep, and then you just go down and crush his trachea or whatever you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, they, you know, they just pulled me right out of it, and then I was gone, and then went down, sang around with the senior drill for a while, and then my partner came back, and then they said, the senior drill, I don't know, maybe it's Monday, the senior drill said, I'll see you Wednesday. I said, no, you'll see. He said, no, I'll see you Wednesday. You know,
mm-hmm.
I said, okay, drill. So he gave me a day off, you know, and no problems after that. In fact, the trainee come up and apologized, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of days after I got back, you know, he come up and said he knew he was wrong. He was, you know, somebody had pissed him off. He said, well, you know, you're going to have to handle that stress. I said, you know, you fuck with me, I'll kill you. That's what I told him. He said, I understand that. I said, no, you didn't understand it then. And you lose your cool and you don't stay focused, you're going to die on the battlefield or get your buddy killed. He said, I understand that, Joseph. I said, good. He said, I'm glad you didn't kill me. He did. He said, thanks for not killing me.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But, you know, in the meantime, the wife was wondering where the hell I was at, because I was so totally immersed in the job, and they worked with her. We'd go 13 weeks, and in 2 years, we averaged 7 days break between every class.
That's pretty intense.
Pretty intense. I've done 72-hour breaks. That is not a break.
No, it's not.
Okay. You know, and so, all right, then, let's see, I lost in the 19th month, okay, all the drills were in the drill sergeant huddle. CO and was right there with them. Drill sergeant huddle, you know, is when they all stand around there just bullshit. And I am taking care of the entire company, getting them lined up and preparing them on this certain specific physical training field where they will go take their final PT test. And we take them down there and we actually drill them through it because we don't give it to them. We're not allowed to test them. It's a committee. So what you do is you want to get them thoroughly indoctrinated on what to expect and how to act and all that. And I'm lining them up, and by now they have, I can talk at this level and they will listen.
Mm-hmm.
They've respected me and I have trained them and they are ready. They know that they got like maybe 6 days left and they listen. So I'm doing this. I'm walking up and down the line. I said, remember this, remember that. All of a sudden, this D7, now here's what happened. My partner, he had duty all night. We had to pull three duties. We had to pull company.
Mm-hmm.
That means you spend the whole night at the company. Or battalion.
Yeah.
Or and brigade. Okay? And if you didn't have anybody take your place, you would get up 3 o'clock in the morning and you would work till 5 at night, then you'd go and you'd spend all night. You weren't allowed to sleep. You weren't allowed to sleep. You weren't allowed to watch TV. You weren't allowed to listen to radio. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd spend up all night on duty. And then when you got relieved at 6 o'clock, then you'd go back and take the troops over again. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the kind of things that you could get stuck with. Well, my partner had duty, and when I came in, you know, he gave me the briefing, all right? However, somehow in miscommunications, but it was really, there's always somebody in charge, whether it's E5 or E67, no matter. The drill sergeant in charge of that block of instruction is in charge. What he puts out, you're supposed to follow. Somehow, I don't know why, but I believe it was more on the guy who was running it, but because my partner was pretty good. You were supposed to go to the PT test and be in uniform whether you was taking the test or not. See, some guys might be sick, or some guys might be on profile, or some guys might be a little bit injured, and the drill sergeant say, look, I don't want him to test, because I wanted him to be ready to test. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not aware of that, and I get everybody out there, and they're in their huddle, and I think I had two, maybe three guys that went along, everybody goes, and they didn't, were not told, they were not in uniform, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They were not like everyone else, which is no big thing. I would pull the guy off the side later and say, hey, no disrespect, bro, but, you know, I do what you say when you tell me, you know, and then, you know, I would have said, well, what are you talking about, Smitty? And he said, well, you know, everybody's supposed to be in the same uniform. And I would have said, hey, I'm sorry about it, man, but, you know, when we change shifts, my partner never told me, man, I'm sorry about it. That's how I would do it. That's how professionals do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and out of nowhere, like, you know, he comes up, Sergeant Wells. And I said, yeah. And I had my clipboard and all. He said, I need to talk to you. Now, this is 160 guys standing here. Okay?
Right.
All right. And he's E7. I'm E6. Don't matter. We're drill sergeants, right? And as I'm walking, I said, okay, and I'm getting a little, what the hell is going on here? I mean, I know I'm not doing nothing wrong because I'm doing all the work, you know? They knew I could handle it. A lot of guys are like that. Sometimes I'd stay in the huddle. The guy was good at something, and he don't need no help. Why should two guys, three guys be telling him to do it? Let Welsh do it. Or let Brown do it. You know, he's good at it. You know, or that's all he needs. Well, as I'm walking in between the ranks, you know, he starts his finger stuff. He said, I want to tell you what, when I tell you something, that was it. That was it. Man, I threw that goddamn, well, they said my clipboard went, my hat went, and I went. Man, I was about four steps from him. In the same time, though, his yelling had opened up the huddle, and every single man, including that CO, seen what was coming down. Smitty was going off on me in front of the troops. Wrong answer. Okay? Uh-huh. And now, Joey, and I was the battalion hand-to-hand instructor, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Joey was coming. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I was coming to tear his freaking head off. Okay? Because I had no idea what the hell he was yelling about, and he was screaming, treating me like I was a goddamn trainee. I was going to kill him. Well, before, just as he was half drunk. To be honest with you, he had a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And a little simple thing, like my guys weren't in the right uniform. He could have handled differently, but he wasn't, I don't know what he wanted to prove, because I'll tell you what, I was one more step and I'd have had him, and this huge Samoan, Sarnimo, and Sergeant Dean, who was my buddy, boxing buddy, they latched onto me and yanked me out of the way, and a couple other drill sergeants jumped on the company and got them their mind off of it, and they pulled me away, and I don't know what they did with Smitty. But I said, I'll kill that son of a bitch, you know, man. He said, no, man, it ain't worth it. Just take it. You sort of talk me down, you know. I said, what the hell is the fucking problem? He went around the back of his truck, and three of your guys weren't in uniform. I said, well, bullshit. I wasn't told that. And I told him, you know, I just swapped. He says, look, you know, he's been out on the, I said, well, I don't give a shit. That motherfucker puts, you know, yeah, they said, all right, be cool. So, I believe, and the CO, that punk, that officer fucking punk, stood there and watched the entire thing. Every drill sergeant there knew I was being verbally abused in front of the company, and I was not. It was totally uncalled for, totally non-professional, and you deserve to get your fucking ass whooped, you know? But they knew how I was, and fortunately, they got to me and got me away. Well, when we get back, the CO calls me in, and he's got a counseling statement. I said, what? Now he says, I'm counseling you for, disrespect to a senior non-commissioned officer. I said, wait a minute, sir. Are you crazy? He said, Sergeant Walters, pay attention. You do not have to, I said, you don't have to tell me about counseling statements. I said, you was there. You seen everything. He verbally assaulted me in front of the entire company. And I didn't know whether he was going to hit me or what. He kept coming at me, pointing his finger, and, hey, he's the one you should be counseling. So I told him, he said, well, listen, you can concur or non-concur. So I wrote non-concur, and then I write my statement. He said, Sergeant Smith, said that, you know, he'd forget everything if you apologize. Oh, man. I said, I'm going to tell you what, sir. hell freeze over before I ever fucking apologize to him. And I said, I can't even believe this is happening. He said, well, you tried to assault him. I said, did I touch him? I never got to touch him. Mm-hmm. And you know, so finally I just walked out and I went over and I told the guys, I said, do you believe this fucking shit? This son of a bitch is counseling me. You know, 19 months of working my ass off, and he's counseling me on something that he's seen. I said, that sorry-ass son of a bitch, you know? And it was because Smitty had been there a little bit longer, and a lot of these young captains ain't never had this kind of thing to deal with, okay? Usually they're supposed to have a command, or I believe they get a command afterwards. Anyway, he had to do something. Well, what he should have done was he should have talked to both of us individually and told us that we were both wrong, and then had to sit down and work it out. There shouldn't have been never paperwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay? I told him I will not apologize, and I don't concur with this statement. And I said, and I will call every drill sergeant there to be an eyewitness if you try to go any further. In other words, Article 15. And I'll take a court martial before you give me an Article 15. And he said, okay, so I want you to take the rest of the day off. I said, no problem. I went in, I told Senior Drill, and I told him. He said, fuck the old man, Smitty's in there. You know Smitty, putting his nose up his ass. I said, well, this is bullshit, man. Bullshit. And this is the Black Ranger. He was cool as ice. He said, Joey, just go home and take a break. Everything will work out. I said, I'll tell you what. I swear. He said, look, all the drills are behind you, man. You ain't got nothing to worry about. Just forget it. So I went home. Come back. I wouldn't look at him. I wouldn't talk to him. I wouldn't go near that man. Okay? Mm-hmm. Just did my job. Nothing happened. And then, about a month later, you know, I went right back to work like nothing happened, but I just did not communicate with Schmidt at all. Schmidt. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it wasn't within a month. They broke it into two brigades, and so they were extending the company. They needed drill sergeants, experienced drill sergeants, to go down to Delta Company to help form Delta Company, which was going to be 2nd Brigade, because it got bigger to where instead of having 1st Infantry Training Brigade and so many companies, battalions, they were going to have 1st Infantry and the 2nd Infantry Training Brigade, okay? They were just, you know, getting more people, they had to expand. So they needed to take someone from our company. And we had a new drill sergeant. He hadn't been out of school but maybe a month. So they were going to send him. I said, no, wait. I said, you don't send a guy that's been in nothing against, he didn't want to go anyway. I said, nothing against, Sergeant so-and-so, but they said there has a minimum of 6 months on the trail, cop. I said, you don't want to send Sergeant, you know, Bellowhead down here. I said, because he hasn't even been through a cycle yet. I said, and he's going to get a brand new drill sergeant. I said, the concept of training and developing a new company, he had this fattest, fucked up first sergeant you could ever find. I said, is half the guys are new and half the guys are experienced. We need to send an experienced guy down there. And I have 7 months left. And I'll volunteer to go. in place with him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I figured this is a smart move. I get to go over there and, you know, what I've learned hopefully helps develop the new company, and I get away from Smitty. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's why I did. And also, and, you know, the guys knew, you know, that it would be better for me because they didn't want to see me screw up, and they knew that I would do good over there. I mean, they would, and even the drills, you have a senior drill, and you have a senior drill that's in charge of all the drills, and then each platoon has two drills supposed to have, and one's a senior drill, one's a junior drill. All the drills are saying, you know, that's a smart thing to do. As much as we hate to see Joey go, you know, we can't send Billy Bob because, you know. Now, there were some lame-ass guys there that spent more time doing work in the orderly room for the first sergeant, and they couldn't run 2 miles, believe me. And they definitely didn't want to send them because it was a bad reflection on us.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, no problem. He said, I'll see what the CO says, you know. So they sent me over there, okay. Man, I met a goddamn gazelle. This goddamn Blackie First Sergeant. He'd been on drill sergeant. He'd been in the Army forever. 2 times as a drill sergeant. Run like a gazelle, and he was sharp, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we hit it off great. I had this new guy. He was been in the Army quite a while. Real smart, a real nice guy. So we played good cop, bad cop. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Very intelligent, good shape. Everything was going good.
Where are we chronologically? Is this
chronologically? We are in around. I did 19 months, so July. You only do 2 years,
mm-hmm.
So we are. I was in the July 81, 82. We were at the end of the. We were around. It was right around Christmas time, I guess. The first year we made the exchange, and then I stayed there from January till July,
okay,
of 83.
Okay.
So I had been on the trail, what they call on the trail, for like 18, 19 months. I had 6 more months, and I'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Now, it's real quick, you know, reassignment because mm-hmm. it's in between. Well, they called me up about, I'd been there a few weeks now, and me and the first sergeant were getting along good because we hadn't any troops yet, and we were going out in runs, and we were doing 7-8 mile runs and shit like this, and we weren't beating them, but there was a lot of guys that weren't hanging, you know,
mm-hmm.
and under his standards, the standard was that your company, you had to run your company for 5 miles. He said, our standards, that was by the 9th week or 10th week. He said, you'll run this company 7 miles. So you better be ready, you know. Well, by the time, 6 months later, I was running 8 and 10 miles every third day with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's far.
And was this guy a Vietnam veteran?
Yeah.
Did you all talk about your experiences in Vietnam?
You didn't really get into it, and you really didn't have much time.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't too many, only a few, because you would have had to be a senior. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
E7,
yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, this is early 80s, and the war's
right.
Plenty over.
But see, I had, that's where I got screwed over, because when, when they'd say, well, he's just a buck sergeant. No. This guy ain't just a buck sergeant. This guy's a buck sergeant with prior service,
mm-hmm.
3 years, and 2 years of that in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me look over his records then. You know what I mean? You know, that's.
So that would hurt you?
But
the fact that you did serve in Vietnam, or that
no,
was
a, it would help me.
Okay.
When I went to get promoted, our battalion commander, see, they only, like I said, we only had three E5s in the entire battalion. All the rest were E6, E7. And his philosophy was, you know, as they're just, if they're just Sergeant E5, drill sergeants, then they should have X amount of time as an E5 before you put them in for E6. Okay? And when they put me in for E6, I got turned down three times. And the first sergeant, you know, he didn't have the balls to stand up and say, "Wait a minute, sir. Let me just, you know, or the commander or anybody, hold on. This is not a regular E5. It's a prior service E5 who has excelled in everything. He's got drill sergeant of the cycle. He's one of the best drill sergeants I got. He's got 3 years of active duty, 2 years special forces duty. Okay, he's not your normal E5. So we need to look at an exception to prescribe policy here. This guy needs to be an E6. You see, compared to the other two E5s, and then there were another one come in, in time-wise, okay, them three, I'm not asking about, but this man needs to be promoted, okay? Mm-hmm. He needs to go to the board. He's sharp. He knows what he's doing. Well, he come back and he said, "Now, if I would have went in September, I would have got promoted in December of 81, whatever." He said, "Joey, you're going to have to do something to lighten this guy up." I said, "What do you mean I'm going to have to do something, Top?" "How about going up for NCO to quarter?" Now, every 3 months, every unit sends up. I missed the drill sergeant of the quarter, so they had the NCO of the quarter. That means you go against everybody. One company sends everybody to battalion. The winner of the battalion sends it to the brigade. The winner of the brigade sends it to the post. The division. Okay, so you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Are you sure you follow me?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In other words, you start at company level and you go against all the guys in your battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy who wins that goes against the other guy from, the brigade you're in might have six battalions. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then all winners of that, them six guys, go against each other to go on to the next higher level representing that brigade. You follow me?
Yes.
Okay. And then the highest you go when you get to post, then it's limited down to basically one per major unit. Now, whoever won in that competition, and they go against, there might have been about, I don't know, 8-10 guys, major units, you know, represented. Then you go against them 8 or 10 guys, and it's like a 3-day event. It's all done. You got to take tests, you got to do questions, you know. And if you win that, the winner of that quarter, by 3 months, I mean, mm-hmm. Okay, at the end of the year, them four people compete for NCO of the year for the post, okay? And that's really saying, you know, that you've been through, in other words, you are the NCO of the year for Fort Benning, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Now, that's pretty rough. You've got jump school, airborne instructors, ranger instructors, drill sergeant instructors, okay, MPs, infantry guys, everybody competes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you say, you know, you got to make them, you know, you got to do something. So no one's ever gotten out of our battalion passed brigade. I won brigade.
Mm-hmm.
I won the next level. I made it to post level. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they take you alphabetically. And they said there wasn't going to be no tenth of a point or nothing. Well, in the meantime, I was competing against Staff Sergeant Volkman. Now, if you remember 10, 15 years ago, the main Ranger poster was this guy in jungle fatigues with a patrol cap and the gold green jungle fatigues. He had his weapon. It was the major Ranger poster in the late 80s, early 90s. Well, that was Volkman. He was like 6'3", 240 pounds of nothing but muscle, okay? And just somebody caught a snapshot of him, and he didn't pose for it. It was, you know, picked. And anywhere you looked, he was like on a patrol. You could see a guy behind him or something, but you could just barely read his name because he had his web gear on, and the SMW still had the slanted pockets, and you could see the V and the little Pathfinder sticking out. But anyway, he was the guy. He was a Ranger instructor then. He had the picture taken when he was in the Ranger battalion. So, and his name was Volkman. So he went in before me. Well, the 3 days out there in testing, him and I hung out together, and we got to know each other pretty well. And, kidding each other, yeah, I'm going to kick your ass. We ain't got no competition, blah, 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 blah. And he had already been selected and was waiting to make E6, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was just doing it because of doing it. He was one of the, hey, you know. But he was gung-ho. Knew his shit. And we went up there, and like I said, let's say there's eight people. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was seven and I was eight. So you had to be up there a certain time. Now, up to that time, I knew that it was going to be close. You know? I felt that I could get him, but I knew that he probably felt the same way. When he walked through the door, this guy walked through the door, and he had his E6 pinned on. His orders come down for E6, so now he's not a competing E5, he's a competing E6. And he came in smiling, and I said, oh, shit. I said, yeah, that's just what you need, too. You need two more of them stripes to beat my ass. You know, that's how, we became pretty good friends. Well, he went in, and when he came out, you're not allowed to talk or nothing, he just winked at me, And then I went in, and, man, I did really, really, really well. I felt good. At the end, they came in and congratulated everybody. However, Sergeant Volkman won. As they're getting ready to leave, they said, Sergeant Walsh and Sergeant Volkman stand fast. Now, that we said that this is five command sergeant majors. They said, we said there isn't going to be no tenth of a point. But let me tell you, we want to congratulate you, Sergeant Volkman, first of all. But let me tell you something, Sergeant Welch, it was that close. We just want to tell you, because mm-hmm. you did such a good job,
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're stone serious,
Mm-hmm.
And we never thought it would come down this close, but through the whole competition, you two guys have definitely excelled beyond. You didn't have any competition. These guys were excellent soldiers, but you two made the whole competition,
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that you get along pretty good. And I looked up and I said, they said, Eddie's. And I said, he's lucky he made that E6 or I'd have had him, you know. And so they laughed and all. Anyway, they stood up, they shook their hands and all that. And we walked out, you know, we were buzzed.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know where that came from, but.
Well, that obviously meant
something
to you.
So now I went back and I was runner up, which means if for any reason that man messes up or he's sick or whatever, I would take his place when they had the NCO of the year. Now, only four people go up then, one per court,
mm-hmm.
you know. So then what's he do? The first sergeant writes up all this great stuff about, you know, what I did, and I made a father in anyone. I'm runner-up for post and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a son of a bitch doesn't realize that he says, okay, in January, he says, okay. Now he just screwed me. He just screwed me for a year because I needed to get promoted on or before December 31st of that year. Okay, which would have been 1982, because when years later, when my next rank comes around, it always goes on or before 31 December of a certain year. So since he screwed me over, I winded up getting promoted in March. Okay, instead of December 1st, I got promoted 1 March. So when it came time to make E7, the cutoff date was 31 December 1982. I was fucked. I had to wait till the following year. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you got to look at things when you're dealing with your career, you know? That, and the guys know it, the senior drill know it and all that, but, you know, dumbass, I don't know. I don't know if the colonel, I think he's the first sergeant, had no balls,
mm-hmm.
You know? I know my first sergeant, here's what happened. Did all that, and I got selected. You have to wait 90 days. So when I went to the new company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was in E6. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, when you leave, every year you need an annual report. And when you leave somewhere, like when I left the unit, they have to give you an evaluation report. Even though, no matter what, they needed to give me an evaluation report because I was changing duty station. So when I left after 19 months of being the drill, I needed an evaluation report, you know, in order to process in over there.
Mm-hmm.
But they called me up and they said, hey, first of all, I wanted me to let you know that your NCOER is on his desk. Just stop by and sign it. So I went over there and I checked it out. Now, I looked and the max is 125, which was what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I had on my list and that's what I should have gotten. I got a 123 and I couldn't find out. They got me for one for loyalty and something else, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty was, I believe, loyalty was requesting to leave the unit. That's being disloyal,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then the other one was for, they have so many different characteristics, Doc, that, you know, they ding me for, maybe it was something like self-tempered, or you know what I mean.
Right.
They dinged me and didn't have the balls to be there when I signed it. So I signed it, and then the guy brought me a copy, and I took it back, and I gave it to my first son. I said, check this out. Whoa, man. I love this guy. He was great. Mm-hmm. He's about 6'4". He looked like he only weighed about 180 pounds, but he was... He said, them sorry son of a bitches. Fucking loyalty and goddamn whatever. He said, goddamn, this is fucked up. He is a punk. That fat fucking punk, and he wasn't there. That fat son of a bitch, we'll appeal this. Well, you know, he said, well, I'll appeal this goddamn thing. You deserve 125. I'll get it. Oh, he was pissed. I said, top, you know, 125 is perfect. I honestly don't think that the system is correct anyway, because you know that nobody's perfect. He said, I know that, but you gotta be a perfect score to compete, you know, to be competitive. And he said, you're right. You're 100% right. We're wrong. Nobody should be getting a perfect. It's very rare. At 122, 121 should be about the super trooper. So it was over inflated, you know, and they've changed that since then. I said, so he said, yeah, but you've got all 125s in your entire goddamn career. Okay, so they're going to flash on this. I said, so let them flash, you know. You know, he said, because you know you're getting 125 from me. He says, God damn it. I said, I don't even want to talk to him. I said, the man is 100 pounds overweight, top. He comes out there and tells, stops. He'll come out and I want, he let me get off a little bit. I said, he will come out. He's fat. He was artillery or something. I don't know. You know who's the most decorated? I was more decorated than him, and I didn't even have half the shit. You know? He didn't even have a CIB, wasn't infantry, he was fat. And he'd come out and tell war stories and this, that. He was fat. He was on the way out, and they were hiding him so he could get out. Okay? And he, it was embarrassing as a drill sergeant, very, very embarrassing to have him represent you. Okay? When our old first sergeant left and our senior drill took the position, you know, he was cool. I mean, he hung one thing up behind his back of his desk, and that was his black beret. You know? That's all we hung up, and he was his first sergeant. He was our senior drill, but it was only temporary till we got this fat son of a bitch in. And, you know, he didn't have the balls to be there so I could question him. And neither did the CO, who was long gone. He didn't want to be near me. So I was, you know, little things like that. But, you know, I see, I would draw whatever I could from another man that I felt, like Vulcan. Me and Vulcan, we became so good friends that he would come down on the 8th week when we moved all the MOSs, and I'd let him come in and give him a pumped up briefing, because he's a fucking ranger, and he'd come in, he's 6. He said, you think I'm big? I'm one of the small ones. And he would fire up my class. He always wanted to be a drill, you know. So I'd give him his day in drill. And he would get, the, you know, just an hour or so of getting him pumped up about being in infantry and all that shit, you know. And he said, if you think I'm big, I'm one of the little ones, you know. And he was a ranger instructor, you know. So he loved that. That would make his day, you know. And in turn, he said, now, you see, I hadn't been through ranger school, and I requested it. He said, now, you know, I got your ass when you come to school, and I'm going to dog the shit out of you. I said, you know, I'm ready for you, you know. But he said, you need to go to ranger school, man. He said, you know, you know more than crazy. You got to do my freaking ranger instructors, but you know, so, you know, I said, I've already got that plan and all that shit. Anyway, everything went pretty good, but,
You were saying that you learned from good men.
I learned a lot of characteristics, or a lot of things that he learned from me and I learned from him. Even though we were competing, being that same airborne ranger blood, we was kind of helping. Like if he was stumped on something, I'd help. he'd help me, even though we were competing against each other. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And fuck everybody else. We were airborne rangers and all that. And then, the same way with that first sergeant, I would suck any kind of knowledge that he had that impressed me, you know, or that I didn't know. I would store it in my storage bank. And then, when I found out what his standards were, when he got there, you will, then I was. And I remember, the last run, he got me by a half a block. And that was 7 months it took me to get, you know, that was after a 10-miler. Mm-hmm. He was good. This guy was 6'3", and I think 6 foot of it was leg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he seen that I was, he challenged us, and he told us what the standards were. And he knew that I was driving, mm-hmm. driving on, driving on. I was going to meet or exceed his, standards. And that's why he stood up for me.
Yeah.
And that's why he was pissed, you know.
So what happens to you as you go through the 1980s? I mean, are you, you're still in?
Here's what happened. Now I'm getting ready to leave. Now, they put me in for Meritorious Service Medal. That's the next step above an Army Commendation Medal. Okay? Usually the cream of the crop. Okay, let's put it this way. The commander will get one, the first sergeant will get one, the senior drill will get one, without question. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The drill sergeants, you know, are case-by-case basis. He put me in for an MSN. And the colonel said, no, we're not, if he's not an E7 or above, he's not getting it. Okay? Mm-hmm. And he came back. Well, I heard him, boy, shut the door. He said, I'll tell you what, sir. Who the hell is? Oh, man, he went off. He said, let me tell you something. Sergeant Wells is the best goddamn drill sergeant you've got out there. And you know it. And you ain't got the balls to stand up to that colonel and say, well, this is one of the 10% that you need to approve. I'm going to tell you what. Rewrite it. You better rewrite it. You had that dumbass lieutenant write it. And he said, if it's written wrong, I'll write it. And then I'm going to the sergeant major. Well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
We go up, and he writes it, and they turn it down, and, oh, he was so pissed. I said, he said, well, they got your award ceremony tomorrow. I said, well, I'm not going. He said, what? I said, there's nowhere in a regulation stating I have to be there. Okay, I said, no, fuck them. He's going to come there, and he's going to tell them how I walked on water and how I was the greatest thing since sliced bread and sticking Arcom on me. Fuck them. I won't be here. And he said, hold on for a minute. He calls up Sergeant Major. He says, by the way, Sergeant Wells ain't going to make it tomorrow. He was crazy. I thought he was going to tell me, you'll do what I say. He said, what? He said, I told you, and I'm not making him come. This first sergeant was my, and this is where I drew. I said, now there's a first sergeant. He ain't no political punk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he ain't coming, and I ain't going to make him come. He said, well, I need to see both of you. We're on the way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He did, and we went over there. And he said, what's your problem? And, y'all want to say something? He said, no. I got the problem. And he said, no, Sergeant Major, problem. She said, no, I got the problem, Sergeant Major. The problem is this man, and I got it right here, and you know it. You brought the brigade commander to watch him give hand-to-hand combat at least 2 times because he felt he was the best you ever seen in the Army. Am I right or wrong? Yeah. And now you ain't got the balls to tell the colonel to sign him off with an MSM because the colonel believes, and you know who it goes to, it goes to me, you, and everybody else that don't do shit around here compared to these drill sergeants. Now, God damn it, I'm not making them come to that goddamn formation, and I ain't coming. He was pissed. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, didn't you or did you not bring the brigade commander bragging about, if you want to see somebody put on a demonstration of hand-to-hand and get troops fired up, you come. How many times do you do that? He's the only man in Fort Benning, Georgia, that got us helicopters. He got us helicopters to make an assault in basic training. What kind of NCO is that? I couldn't even do it. You couldn't even do it. He did it. He got us an air assault. These kids got to ride in a chopper in an air assault, and it was done perfect. Could you do it? No. Could I do it? No. This E-Sip did it, and he did it perfect. And you bragged and bragged and bragged about you was the only battalion that ever had an air assault. He chewed him till he was blue in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the same old shit. I tried, but the commander wouldn't listen. He said, yeah. He said, but you know you have to be there. He said, we'll be there. Just cut it short, because I'm tired of your bullshit. That's just what he said to him. Now, see, that's what I picked up.
Mm-hmm.
See, because sergeant majors have a tendency to become political. They have no soldiers. They're the colonel's right-hand man. And I said, when I grow up, I'm going to be in the first sergeant like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones that I met. That's all I work for, and nobody will tell me nothing. And that's what I did. They offered me sergeant major. I said, no, I'm done. I did what I had to do.
When was this? What year?
When?
What year was this? Was this 84?
This was 83.
Okay.
July of 83. I'd done my 2 years. They had another guy I did 2 years. They had another guy extend 6 months to help him out, and they didn't give him an MSM. They finally did. But you know where that came from?
Where?
It came from us raising so much hell about me.
Huh.
Yeah, and shortly after that, they had turned his down. They approved his because he had 2.5 years. I even knew the guy, and he said, everybody heard about what we did, you know. And they knew First Sergeant Weeks. But I hate fucking officers. You don't put it that way. Let's put it this way, and this is the truth. I can say, honestly, that I can count on one hand the officers that I've met and I've worked with, okay,
mm-hmm.
that I would trust in battle. Now.
Why do you think that is?
I've been there. Mm-hmm. I know them. Now.
What's wrong?
I'm saying the ones I served under. Mm-hmm. I know other ones that I didn't serve under that I'd go with in a heartbeat.
What do you think then makes the bad officer? Why is that so prevalent?
Oh, my God. They're primed. They got a ticket to ride, okay? They go do this for so long, okay? They have to go through infantry and be a commander for 2 years. That's it. The NCO spends 20 years in the line. Let's say he makes first sergeant at 16 years. He spent 16 years on that line, grinding the troops. The captain runs in there for 2 years and becomes a commander, and then they shoot him up to a staff position. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They have to punch their ticket. And then they have to get a master's degree. So during the meantime, they sent them to college. Okay? Every single man that left Vietnam, don't get me wrong, there's some fantastic stuff, but there's such a slight percentage. They would have to come into Vietnam as an infantry officer, all right? Mm-hmm. And they would have to do 12 months. They would do 6 months online and 6 months in staff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my infantry officer was an alert platoon leader. In 6 months, he spent one night in the field. Now, they didn't have to, but most of the platoon leaders got out there and at least went on, maybe once a month, they go on a platoon. I mean, go on a patrol.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, they didn't have to, but that's what a good officer does. He's going to get out there a couple times, and he's going to listen to the team leader. But, man, that builds so much respect between you and the men. Because he knows what it's like, and he's going to do more for you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't mind seeing him get his CIB and Bronze Star. But when I stand in fucking formation, while my punk-ass lieutenant never went on a goddamn patrol, gets a CIB and Bronze Star, it makes me sick. It makes me puke, that fucking punk. And then he'll go spend 6 months in an air-conditioned office and probably he'll be an operations NCO, God forbid, and he's going to try to tell how the troops to move and all this shit. Well, hopefully he went to the straight-leg grunts because he was a worthless platoon leader as an alert. And let me tell you something, they know how we feel about it. I'm in the unit, and the ones that we tell, we got a couple our new unit director, he's good. He's good because I was told that he went on patrol several times. So that, to me, right there, is a damn good man. He had to. He said, I had to go out there. I had to understand what they were going through and what it felt like and all, which made me know more about what's needed. And it drove me harder to learn how to get it to them and how to do things right for them. Mm-hmm. That is a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other one is a ticket puncher. And that's what I'm saying.
I see.
And when I got first sergeant, I got the worst officer that I had ever worked with in 25 years. And there it is. The thing that I had been waiting for my whole career. And I was hoping I would get this captain that I used to work with. He was Airborne Infantry Ranger qualified, super smart kid, spent 3 years in Panama in the jungles, spoke fluent Spanish. He was a fast mover, but not political. He was in excellent shape. He knew the ground. He knew training. He'd been perfect. I got me an air defense officer who was a fat slob. He couldn't make it to PT. He wouldn't come to PT. He was a big bully of a man. And most guys, could think, man, it's a badass son of a bitch. He couldn't do shit. He couldn't run a half a mile. And he knows he came in and yelled at me one day. He yelled at me and slammed my door, and I jumped over my desk. I was ready to kill him. I said, I'll kill you, motherfucker. I was screaming, don't you ever come in my goddamn office. I knocked him back, and he sat down, And he said, well, damn, Top, if I need to vent. I said, if you need to vent, there's everybody listening. I said, if you need to vent, then come in and vent. So don't you ever come through my door like you're going to kick my goddamn ass and talking to me like I'm some fucking private.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat down and he vented, And I had another big black guy, captain, infantry, ranger, and all that shit. See, I evaluated every single NCO's evaluation before it went. And if I didn't say it was unacceptable, it wouldn't send back to the captain. Mm-hmm. And why? Because I know what the sergeant major wants. And if you don't do it right, the sergeant major calls me up and says, hey, you know what the fuck's wrong with you? I'm getting these NCOER evaluations and they're done wrong. So it's real simple. They go through me and I dot the I's and cross the T's and do little things and we don't get them turned back. Well, he came busting in my door. He says, I don't think you. He slammed by. I said, don't you ever come for me. And I went out. We were going to go. I just gorilla. I said, I'm going to tell you what. You're goddamn. I'm not trying to run your team. But that NCOER will not make it through to sergeant major. The bottom line, I know. I'm the one that gets my ass chewed when you get sent up there. I don't ever come pushing through my goddamn door. I don't care who you are, Captain. And he turned around and slammed the door, man. You know, I was shaking.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I'm going to fight this fella. This guy is big, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't standing down. I said, this is honest to God truth. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I was in a hallway and the... Behind me was the CO. I was the next to last one. And across from him was a writer, and then across, and then before me was the admin, and across them was supply. Well, you could hear a pin drop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was pissed, man. So I just fucking got my shit, and I get out of there, you know?
So where are you going career-wise? What's happening now?
I was first sergeant.
Okay.
It's 1994.
Okay.
Okay. And, you know, I got a damn good group of people. I just got a fucked up commander that I got to deal with. And then now I got a captain runs one section of two captains. Let me put this right. There was a captain in charge of the psychological operations team that did the platform instruction, and there was a captain that was in charge of the special forces guys who gave the civil affairs block of instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they should have never formed them together. In the regular training unit, all the drills stay with all the students, and all these instructors, they live in a committee group and never see the trainees except when they come to their period of instruction. So this made it even worse because now the instructor who taught this girl all day gets to see her at night because he is moving in and out. It caused a lot of problems.
Right. I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I told him from the beginning that the committee group, I just said, when I got there, they had the committee group in charge of the drill sergeant. When I got there, I just changed everything. I just said, okay, committee group, you will take care of your men, and they will, you know, make sure they do the period of instruction,
mm-hmm.
and you'll write their NCOERs, but I will evaluate them, okay,
mm-hmm.
because I told them. I said, and you, NCOICs of the committee group, okay, you will not, this goes for you too, Captain, no one will say anything to the drill sergeant. The drill sergeants are under me. I am the senior drill sergeant / first sergeant. They fall under me. They do what I say, when I say it, and when I tell them. And don't anybody ever, ever try to tell my drill sergeant anything. Is that understood? If you got anything to say, raise your hand. Now, all of you been through the Army. Now, the reason they did this, I don't know. But you know it's wrong. You shouldn't even be within 10 miles of these goddamn students. But you are. But you're not going to be within 10 feet of them when I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the senior drill. I'm in charge of all enlisted. I'm in charge of all the training. Okay? you will not talk to a student outside of that classroom ever.
How did he respond to this?
How do you? They didn't say a fucking word.
Mm-hmm.
If you are talking to a student outside of that classroom, I'll get you for fraternization and I'll break you down. I'll break you down and I'll... That's the way I talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I was very intense. But what was it? It was controlled rage. Remember the rage?
Yes.
See? You learn the controlled rage as you develop, if you do it right. I knew that I had to take charge because the company was totally out of control. And I was just the man that was going... And if you in any way feel that you're Billy Badass, and I know some of you's got black belts and all, okay, jump right on up. Because I'm from the old school. And I'll take off this shirt, and you can take off that shirt, and we can go around the back of the barracks anytime, any place, if that's the way you want to do it. But don't pack a lunch, because it ain't going to take long. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now, that's not threatening anybody, but that's the way I work. Okay? Now, it's got to be done this way, and you all know what I'm saying is true. Them drill sergeants have been drugged through hell and been pushed around. God damn it. I think half of you are jealous because you're not the drill sergeant. Well, let me tell you what. They're going to get the respect they deserve. And you'll get the respect you deserve if you deserve it. They're going to deserve it or I'm going to fire them. I'll just fire them. I'll fire anybody. You understand me? I am an old soldier, and I've worked my ass off to get where I'm at. And we do not have a good commander. This was right off the bat. I said, but I'll fight as much as I can to get everything that you need and this company needs. And if you do something wrong or something goes bad, you come to me right away, and you do not lie. Let me know first, and I'll help you. If you lie to me, or you don't tell me, I'll send your ass to jail. Everybody makes mistakes. If you make a mistake, you screw up, come to me. Tell me the truth so I won't be blindsided. And if you're a damn good, true soldier, which you're going to have to be or I'm going to fire you, then, you know. Now, I know you've heard these kind of speeches before, but I'm going to tell you what. Next month, when we have the meeting, I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I think by then you'll know that I can walk the walk, let alone talk the talk. That was it. I said, dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it worked out. If I would have had that captain, we would have done, well, I'm telling you what, the commanding general of the Special Warfare Center, Special Warfare Training Group, when he came down, he said, this is the most important company in the group. It's not the Special Forces Qualification Course or the HALO Course or whatever. We're making history here. We have AIT, the only advanced individual training. These guys have got to take these guys who are young troops and integrate them into the special operations community. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're not special forces. They're not Rangers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to work with them. So I'm going to tell you what. They've got my support 100% plus. Whatever they need, they're going to get, because they are the most important soldiers being trained out there. They don't have 6, 8, 10 years experience like these guys going through the Special Forces course. These are brand new soldiers. This is so important to us to make this program right. That's where his head was,
mm-hmm.
You know. but I had a punk for commander, and I went up and I told Sergeant Major, listen, if you don't do it, I'm going in there and I'm going to tell that fucking colonel that that goddamn captain is as worthless as a piece of fucking shit. He can't run. He will not make formations. He told me I can't hold formations, so now I got them split up formations. He doesn't know anything about training. He cannot run one half a mile and keep up with us. I never let him go with you. And we went on a ruck, and he fell out of the ruck. Okay? Mm-hmm. I said, Sergeant Major, you know he's an asshole. Why do I have to live like this? You know? He said, I said, now don't be bullshit. He said, listen, it's politics. It's flat out politics. You know that. You think that, listen, you're saying it loud enough that the colonel hears what you're saying. Well, just slow down. You're getting the point across. You think I'm dumb? The colonel hears what you're saying. He knows it. Okay? He knows it. That's why I was doing it. You know, I wasn't yelling at the Sergeant Major, but my inflection, I knew that the colonel could hear what I was saying.
Right.
You know, so he just put his answers up. It's officer business. There's nothing I can do. You damn sure just told him everything. What am I supposed to do? I can't do anymore. I said the same thing. You know, you have to serve. Is there anything? Don't worry about it. You know, I'm talking to him, and he's, that's all I get. What can I do? My hands are tied, man. He said, he just got done practically, you know, giving the colonel the whole fucking life story of the guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You got the point across. I said, all right. I really like the Sergeant Major, but I said, but you know, he's dragging me down. He's holding me back. He said, Christ. He said, Christ, well, you got the best goddamn company in the fucking goddamn unit. I said, no, I don't. You give me Captain Allen, and I'll show you the best goddamn company in the fucking unit. And he said, man, you, you know, I said, no. These people have got to go into a special forces environment and ranger environment. They must be able to conduct themselves accordingly. They're not no goddamn airborne ranger special forces. The guy's only been in the army when he reaches them, maybe, you know, maybe 4 or 5 months. And he could be attached to a special forces team to provide psychological or civil affairs support. I want him to know what to do. I want him to be ready. And he said, you know, I can't do nothing. Mm-hmm. I said, fine. That's it then. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, the new Sergeant Major came in and wants to know why I've got the position. And you said, because he's the best for the position. I interviewed everybody, and he was the best. And he said, well, you don't have the proper MOS. And what did I tell you? I told you, tell him that I will leave after a year. And you told him, right? See, I should have done 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He said, no. I said, oh, well, you tell him. Just let him finish out his year so he can punch his ticket, and then you'll get, you know, whoever you want. Well, a week later, the Sergeant Major comes in. I said, wait a minute, Sergeant Major. Excuse me. Sergeant Major, no disrespect intended. But you know what? If I listen to everybody come in here and tell me how to train these soldiers, I'd never get them trained. I said, I understand that you might think that that way is better and this way is better, but do you know how many people I try to tell me how to train my soldiers? He said, no, wait a minute, Sergeant Major. I said, no, you wait. First Sergeant. I said, no, you wait a minute, Sergeant Major. First of all, you know, you don't want me in the position. No, no, that's why I come and talk. And I said, no. Let me tell you something. Okay? I'm going to respect you, but I expect respect back. You don't come in my company and tell me how to train my soldiers. Because I'll tell you what. Have you ever been a drill sergeant there, Green Beret? There's an entirely different thing. I said, you know, I've been out there in the bush training soldiers and training indigenous personnel like you, too. This is a different type of an environment. Everybody wants to tell me how to do it. Well, let me tell you something, Sergeant Major. When I see you do something that really, really, you know, makes me think you're really good, or if you've done this before, then maybe I'd think about listening to you. But you ain't got the goddamn pass. You ain't wore the cap. You don't know shit about being a drill sergeant. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be out of here in 5 months. He said, no, you ain't got to rush off. I said, no. Oh, what are you saying? He said, well, I didn't know you then. And, oh, so you don't want me to leave now? Well, I'm just saying you don't have to rush off. Oh, I don't have to rush off. But what happens is when it's time to leave, I'm going to get screwed because they're going to let the commander go, and then I'll have to stay here as an overlap to get the new CO on board. So then that's what you get out of me.
So you're kind of at your wit's end here.
Pardon me?
You're kind of at your wit's end here, it sounds like. I mean, you've reached your
level. Oh, no, I'm totally in control.
No, I mean with the Army in general. I mean, you're...
No, well, you know, he said, look, I got E-8 SFs running around here. They ain't doing shit. And I got an E-8-11B down there that's running the show. And the Sergeant Major said, look, I picked the best man. He is the best man. If you don't, let me tell you something, Sergeant Major. I'm going to tell you something. You're going to see. I picked him. I interviewed, I don't know, 9 people. There wasn't anybody came near him. He's been with SF. He's been in civil affairs. He's worked with PSYOPs. He's been in the NAM. He's been in the Persian Gulf. He's been there, been there. He's been a drill sergeant. He's been an instructor. He is the best man, and he's got the best company in this battalion. And all I'm telling you is just to watch. He says, well, I'll give him a year. Okay, fine. Give him his year so he can punch his ticket, and that'll be it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the guy says, no. I said, no. So I made you, that ain't the way I work. I said, you made a decision on how I was based on looking at my name. Well, you got to understand my position. No. You think that I would never base a decision on a man's name and job title without even checking what his performance is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you did that. So that right there, to me, that was it. You want to go get somebody? Fine. And you know what? You can't find nobody as good as me. Is that bragging? You're damn right it's bragging. And you're going to see who you wind up with. And if I didn't have this fucked up commander, this thing would be 50% better company. But I'm tired of hearing you Green Berets tell me shit. I was in with Green Berets same time you was in Vietnam, so don't talk this stuff to me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm stone serious. I'm looking for a job starting in October, November.
So what happened?
Huh?
What happened? What was the fallout?
The fallout was, he said, well, you're not going to change your mind. I said, no way, Sergeant Major. And good luck. Good luck on your replacement. And I'll tell you what. Well, no, he had to leave me go. He didn't have to. He could have made me stay, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's just the way I was. I didn't back down from nobody.
Well, that's
I'll tell you what. the sergeant major, the group training sergeant major, see, I went up and seen him. He's the top sergeant major. I said, "Sergeant major, you're a good problem. What else, what is it?" I said, "Let me tell you something. I got four drill sergeants down there, right?" He said, "Right." I said, "Well, you know, they come from PSYOPs, and we have nothing to say about it. They pick who goes to school. And they're going to come to me, and I feel that they should have a selection board, and they, you know, the people compete, and they have a primary and an alternate."
Mm-hmm.
"And we should be on the board."
Right.
"Myself and the sergeant major." I said, "Because we're the ones who are going to get them. We don't know who they pick." He said, "You're crazy, Welch." I said, "Well, what do I do if he's fucked up?" He said, "Fire him." I said, "What?" He said, "Fire him." I said, "Okay, that's what I'm going to do. And you're going to back me up." He said, "I just said fire him, Welch. You crazy son of a bitch, get out of here." I said, "Wait till then."
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew I was crazy, but he knew what I meant, you know. And, you know, I fired my best drill sergeant that I ever had. You know, I had to, but it depends on the person himself. In my experience, okay, I have had several, what I would consider, very substandard officers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the other hand, I have had, in special ops especially, a considerable amount of guys, and I say guys, officers that were outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even though I might not have worked with them. I've seen outstanding officers actually pushed out of the system while fat, sloppy-ass son of a bitch do nothing, know nothing, stay in it. It's political. And ring knockers, the West Pointers,
mm-hmm.
they tried to explain in this thing real quick. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to finish up with this.
Okay.
About the Ranger tab. How, you know, when we put in for it, it was supposed to be black, it was supposed to be the same colors as the Ranger scroll.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, it came back, it was red outline. Okay, black background and a white Ranger. That's what was asked for. It came back gold trim, black background, and gold letters. That's the colors of West Point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now they try to say this stupid reason I just read about it was bullshit. The goddamn colors are West Point colors, gold and black, okay? And then they try to say it's the Army colors. No, it was definitely done, you know,
by the
political.
West Point. Yeah.
Political, okay? They wouldn't maintain the red, black, and white colors of the Ranger scroll like we wanted. Not we. This is 50, you know?
Yeah. So with the exception of people like that, you did work with some good officers.
I did work what?
With the exception of these West Pointers and others.
No.
You did have some good officers, or you had good officers from West Point.
I don't want it to get. There's terrible NCOs too.
Right.
Okay. It's just that I'm saying that unfortunately, when I had the positions that I really, really, really needed. A good officer,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had one of the worst officers that I've ever met,
mm-hmm.
in my career, okay? I've had an excellent officer that was fantastic, and I watched him get screwed out of the Army,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's political. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a system of, it's too political,
mm-hmm.
okay? And as the higher you grow up, and that's what happens when you get up in the sergeant major arena and all, mm-hmm. becomes more political.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't politicking nobody. I'm either a damn good professional, hard-charging NCO,
mm-hmm.
okay? I don't kiss nobody's ass, you know, but sometimes I gotta bite my tongue,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I live, okay, but I, you know, I don't go for this politics shit, okay, you know, you sit back there like the guys did in LERPs, and you don't go out with your men. I respect the lieutenants who, even if they went out three or four times, because they had work to do too, but they went out there to learn. One, they went out there, they had to know what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
A man would have to know what it's like to be on the ground so he understands what conditions these guys are going through, because he's the one flying around in the bird dog trying to help us.
Yes.
And that's the man that I respect. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that's the man that all... Now, that's on a person, that's on a professional. You know, I might not get along with them, you know, personally, but I'm saying that this is the kind of guy that usually makes the best leader.
Right.
You've got to lead by example, and you go out there, even if you go out once a month, you know, and you get out there and get a few patrols in, the patrol leaders, the platoon sergeant, everybody, the men, and you don't run it, they run it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the men have a lot more respect for you, especially when you turn around that, you integrate that into your job, and you fight to get everything right for your team. That's a true office.
Mm-hmm. Someone who walks the walk. And
that's talking. The talking the talk is when you sit back there, what'd you do? And we've got them right now.
Mm-hmm.
They even write books.
Mm-hmm.
He's sick. You know, he talks the talk, but he can't walk the walk.
Right.
Now this guy, the officer who comes in, he goes out there. When he gets to know his troops, he goes out there, he gets some patrols. He might get his ass shot out a few times. He'll definitely be a better platoon leader because he's going to know what's going on the ground. He actually knows what it feels like, and he'll do everything in his power to produce everything he needs to help his men.
Yeah.
End of conversation. That's it. You can't walk the walk. You know,
mm-hmm.
You can talk the talk, but until you walk the walk, you ain't shit.
Why don't we end on that note?
I will.